All right. Welcome to Word, Warren. We're going to talk about some books.
Yes, we are.
Not for the second time. That'd be embarrassing.
That would be so embarrassing. No, yeah.
Okay. I'm your host, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
And with me today is Hannah on the controls.
Not doing a very good job today is what's not happening over here.
Hannah's killing it, everyone. Say thank you. Yeah.
And our special guest, Torin.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yes.
At least we weren't here. Not recording for an entire hour because that would have been horrifying. I would have been so mad.
A good warm-up round for like next week.
Yeah.
I'm gonna one of these days I'm gonna take this Zoom and I'm gonna throw it in the trash can and I'm just gonna be like, I don't know what happened, it just vanished one day, somebody must have taken it, somebody must have stole it.
I think I saw it grow legs. I don't know. There might have been Smurfs involved.
It gained sentient and went off.
The ghosts took it.
The ghosts,
and
yes.
We all know about the ghosts in the attic. Mm-hmm.
So for those of you listening along who weren't here for our non-recorded part of the intro of this podcast, we're talking about fantasy for the third month in a row. We're
talking about fantasy again.
And we had a lovely talk about Redwall and Cozy Mysteries, and it was great, and we're not going to do it again.
We're not going to try to recreate that. Okay,
that's
I'm so sorry.
Podcast, so exclusive, we didn't release it.
Exactly.
But believe me, if you would have been listening to it, you would have been delighted by our banter.
It was a delightful
conversation. I'm so mad. So, Sarah, okay. We've talked about fantasy a few times.
We have, yes. We covered a bunch of different kinds of fantasy. Kind of just going to do general fantasy talk. Yes.
It's just not as good the second time around.
Right.
our saluting of the microphones.
Torin said he was reading the Dragon Age one, so he did some research on Dragon Age books, and so we could talk about Dragon Age.
I love Dragon Age so much. Like, more than is probably healthy or reasonable.
As a kid, one of the ways that I, like, learned to really enjoy reading and fantasy as a genre was playing Dragon Age Origins.
Yeah.
Every day.
I have read every single codex in Dragon Age Origins. Like, there's been times when people are like, what are you reading? And I'm like, well, here's the thing. I'm playing Dragon Age, but I am doing a lot of reading because there's so many codexes and like lore things and creature stuff. Like I read all of it. I'm doing a lot of reading.
I spent an amount of time going through all of the intro quest lines for Dragon Age on each of the different character start quests, just so I could read all of the codices about all of them. And my favorite being the Fade and reading about all of the complicated, like, BS history that Dragon Age puts into their, like, magic system and, like, the royal ability of, like, the elves creating the Fade and shattering everything and just, the depths that like game goes into
they're,
describing
the world building
everything
and lore is insane.
They do such a good job, and as Hannah said, that is a novel you can read in and of itself. It's just the codex in that game can take you days,
so much time to read it. It's why I don't stream my gameplay when I play any Dragon Age games. Is because even though I've read through all the codex, every time I find one I will sit and read it. And that is really boring with how long those are. And my chat will usually be like, "Okay, you done?" And I'm like, no. This is how we play the game.
I find a random book on a stool. Oh, that's three pages of lore. I'm going to sit down and start reading.
Would you guys like me to read it out loud? Because I will.
I have voices for all of these characters, I promise.
But it's going to take me longer to read it out loud than if I read it silently, I promise you.
Captive audience, hello.
I have a very small audience of people who watch me play games because I am the most obnoxious person to watch play games, because I'm like, ooh, I'm going to explore every single corner of this room and I'm going to read every single piece of text. And then if I'm playing Skyrim, I'm going to sit here for 3 hours and do inventory management. I hope you're all ready.
If you ever play the Resident Evil games, I think you'd enjoy the inventory management there. That's good.
Probably would.
That's good.
Anyway, sorry.
No.
That's a tangent. But yes.
All was related to fantasy still.
It was.
Still,
it
roughly. Was.
Roughly, yeah. Urban fantasy, Resident Evil.
Right, I mean, exactly.
Horror, but still urban fantasy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
We've now justified ourselves.
We're fine.
It's fine. Everything's fine, guys. Nobody panic.
Nobody panic.
So, keep calm and don't forget to bring a towel. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I'm staying genre relevant.
Yes, it's great. So, I don't know. Because all I did was read some synopsis like of the games, and I didn't really read any synopsis for the books, though. I just like wrote down their publication order because there's like six novels that came from the game.
I still need to read the novels. I've been looking at them for years. For years, being like, I need to read those.
I kept getting adverts for the comics. And I was like, well, these I have to pick them.
I've been reading the comics.
And they're amazing. Like the Inquisition comics touching on a couple characters that are really dear to my heart. The Scout Harding and Varric and just all of that Scout is really Harding good. So Scout much. Harding. Ah, God. Pour one out. But the novels I decided to pick up, I was looking through inventory and was like, let's order this one. I got the last one off iPage, very happy about that.
Nice.
But excellent. The Stolen Throne being a intro, kind of like a prequel to the very first game, the Dragon Age Origins game, and revolving around the King Merrick and his mom and Kaelin and Sir Tirin Loghaine and trying to like figure out more about what happens, because when you start Dragon Age Origins you meet all of these characters when they're kind of in their prime and have done everything in their life.
They're characters of legend at that point,
right? Exactly. Okay. Like big bad heroes. And so the books kind of really bring them down to earth. You have just this kid, this like 16-year-old pretty boy that is the future king of the land, and then you have Tirin Loghaine, who he's a nice guy as a kid. He definitely gets more jaded as he grows up, but I think it's a really good example of the world-building aspect of Dragon Age. It sets you up. It talks about these characters that they just kind of throw at you, and Dragon Age does a great job of telling you who these people are in the game.
And making them feel important.
Exactly. But I like how in the kind of dark fantasy that Dragon Age is, it says, no, these aren't competent heroes. These are just kids.
These are just kids going through it. It's basically a chance for you to see the heroes who seem so put together as just you when you start Dragon Age Origins.
Right, and you're just like,
hi guys, I don't know what's going on, but the world's gonna end if we don't stop it. So I hope we all live. Good luck.
It brings you down to earth a little bit.
Can I just say, for the games, the reason that your warden never comes back in the second or third games is just because your warden is so overly competent at everything they do that, like, they would just put down the Qunari Uprising immediately, dethrone Meredith, and then in Inquisition, they'd just be like, no, everybody sit down. We're going to kill a god today. Nobody's fighting about it.
Like, I've killed three already. I don't know why we're talking about this.
Why are we here? They were like, we can't have the warden involved in Inquisition. They would solve it so fast. They have to be outside of Thedas. They have to be away from everything, like, doing something else.
Like, our warden's killing a different set of deities right now, solving that other crisis, other side of the planet. We have to work with what we got right now.
I read so many fan blogs and stuff, and they're like, I hope our wardens get to come back in Game 4, and I hope that we get to revisit that. And I'm like, no. The warden can never come back. You guys don't understand how good they are at solving problems. By the time they're done saving the world from the blight, they're so competent. You can't throw them at any problems. It would not be a game. They're just gonna throw Solas off of the battlements at Skyhold and solve the problem.
Let's get rid of the one bad egg. Now there's no game four.
They'd just be like, I don't like you. I'm gonna kill you right now.
I love the references to your character. So if you romance one of the characters that is in the second and third games, like Liliana, and you talk to her and she's like, oh, my love off in a distant land. Yeah, kicking ass.
Kicking ass in distant lands. I love how angry Liliana is if you choose to betray her in the first game, and then you talk to her in Inquisition and she's like, they're a snake.
And then
I don't know if that's the wording she
did. No, it's pretty close. But then you talk to Morgan, she's like, yeah, I really like all the work they did. It was really good.
They were so
being
good.
An evil sorceress and convincing you to do horrible things to the countryside.
I mean, Morgan is my BFF, so I mean,
it didn't take a lot of convincing. I'm just saying, it was some convincing.
She was just like, "We're friends," and I'm like, "Yes, here's a mirror. I like you a lot, lady.
I can't not give her the mirror.
Be my sister. I love you. Please love me back. I need family so badly."
What start did you do? What was your favorite start to Dragon Age Origins?
Oh no, my favorite start. Oh, you know, I think I have to say that it was my very first character, and I did the castless dwarf.
Yeah,
start.
Yeah.
That one, I think, and I think it's probably just because it was my very first Dragon Age playthrough, and I was just so enamored with the game and everything. But man, that one is really fun.
It is. And trying to like break into like the royalty and like the big fight at the
end. Doing the proving and everything.
Yeah. He's like, who's this guy? I don't know. He's got a slave mark. Hopefully he's not going to ruin everything.
Hopefully he won't ruin everything. Good luck.
My favorite, again, talk about dark fantasy. My favorite is by far the City Elfstart.
Oh God, that one's so hardcore though.
I hadn't played through it. It was the last one I ever played through. Right. And I was like, oh, all of these are like, there's, it's, you get a dark, tragic backstory for a lot of the starts, right? Yeah, it's like the mage, you're torn away from your family.
Trademarked the dwarf. Tragic backstory.
Right. Like they do a really good job of hitting you with those. And then you do the city elf one and it just takes that to a whole nother level.
It's okay. It's brutal. It's, depending on if you're male or female. I think if you're if you do the female
you
one,
are the
you
bride.
Are the bride.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're getting married. And then a human noble from the city comes in.
Who's like
in.
The son of the leader of the city or something. Like he's very,
like
very important.
The son of the Arl.
Young white boy,
right? Comes in and him and his buddies are going to have a fun time with you is all I'm going to say. And it is a brutal opening for
so
that
if
story.
You're the groom, you fight through the castle to rescue everyone from the wedding. And if you're the bride, you fight out of the castle to rescue everyone from the wedding.
Oh, God.
Okay. And it's good. They do a really good job. And you win the fight at the end of the day. Yeah. But it is a tragic backstory.
It is tragic.
Mm-hmm. And the first time I beat the game was with that character. It was with like a sword and shield elf woman and just vengeance against everyone.
How about least favorite opening?
The mage one, I think. Like, it's great, but it's just always the exact same. You can't play a dwarf and be magic, which is still tragic.
Which makes me so sad. I want to be a magic dwarf.
Like, I like where they came from. The lore is like, the dwarves aren't in touch with, like, the magic of the realm. They can't access it. Their bodies just aren't made for it.
But in the DLC for Inquisition, there's, like, a little bit of hinting at it, and I'm really excited to see where that's going.
One of the dwarves that you meet very early in the series gets rune magic, and then she from there gets a little bit more advanced. She's been studying. If you help her in the other game, she like remembers the warden, she remembers the stuff, and like she's practicing a lot, and she like does a little tease of magic at the very end there. So maybe in the fourth game we're gonna get something.
The Deep Roads DLC for Inquisition, where you have the Shaperit, and you go down, and you find out about the Titans and all of that. Like, that heavily hints that dwarves once had magic, and then they lost it somehow. Mm. Heavily hints at it. And I'm like, Solas is going to rip the veil down. Are the dwarves going to get their magic back? Can I be a dwarf with magic, please?
And I wouldn't have to go through the circle training, because dwarves aren't going to like, oh yes, Templars, please imprison me in a tower for 10 years.
Right. I think the mage one a little bit, but I think that the Dalish elf origin is actually my least favorite, just because it felt so overly forced.
Right.
Because like the other ones have kind of a better line for Duncan to be like, hey, come join us or you're going to get killed. And the Dalish elf one is just like Duncan being like, you're going to be a warden. And you're like, no. And he's like, yeah. And then your keeper's like, yeah, you should do that. And you're
then
like,
your friend dies halfway through and there's not really like clear on that. And they definitely do the Dalish elves a little dirty there.
Right. It was a little. We're talking about books. We're not talking about books. It's okay.
It's all fantasy.
Welcome to the game cabinet. We're going to talk about books.
This is where we start the podcast for a third. I mean, second time.
I mean, definitely not a third time.
Definitely not. I was just, when you guys are talking about all the lore and stuff of the game, because obviously I don't know very much about that. But it was reminding me of this book I read like a long time ago called You by Austin Grossman, which is like, it's actually about a video game developer.
Ooh.
But then like when they're talking about the game that they're developing in the book, it just, it sounds awesome. And it sounds like all that, you know, because like all the fantasy names too, it's just like, oh, they're, yeah, all the same. It's like Loghain and like Merrick or
right,
whatever.
You have,
it's
you
just,
have some like, good names the, out like, there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you should play Dragon Age is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The moral of this whole podcast, play Dragon Age Origins.
Yep.
It holds up, I promise.
You can get it on Steam for pretty cheap.
Yeah. It was on sale the other day, like 75% off most of the options.
I bought it the other day, beginning of this year. I bought it for $8.
I think a while ago I bought the Legendary Edition of the first one for like $12 from like Best Buy or something.
Yeah, I got it for like $8 on Steam, and then I got Inquisition for like $6 on Steam, and then I paid $30 for Dragon Age 2 because it wasn't on sale and I was really mad about it.
Still have never gotten that game on Steam, just playing it on Origins still.
My gaming system still isn't unpacked because I'm lazy and I don't have a good place to put my TV yet. So I really wanted to play Dragon Age. And so I was like, I'll just buy it on Steam and then I can play it on my computer. And then I can download mods. And I realized that I'm really bad at mods. And so,
modding Dragon Age is so much worse than any other PC game, I swear. They're like, you can do this, but...
But you need to know what you're doing. I broke the game so many times. I was like, okay, and we're done modding the game.
I think I deleted Redcliffe once on accident when modding the game. There's a whole arc of the story. Very vital to everything happening. And that just didn't happen. Story broke a little bit after that.
My Inquisition game still won't launch on my PC, and I have to figure out why. I think my drivers might be too old. Sarah, you should play Dragon Age Origins. That's what I'm saying. You could be a lovely dwarf lady.
Okay.
With a big beard. Actually, nice. I don't know if the female dwarves can have beards in Origins.
In Inquisition, they definitely can. Don't know about any other game.
Do you have anything more you want to say about the books before we move on?
Because I'm still reading The Stolen Throne still, mm-hmm. and only 60, 70 some odd pages through, just starting basically.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the world building is the reason I picked those books up and the reason I'm going to finish all three of them. They all revolve around different parts. Like the second one is big on the second game. The third one is after Inquisition. All the comics are after post-Inquisition stuff.
Isn't there one that has the like Cole's story?
There is, yeah. There's a small run in, like, I think the Race of Tevinter that talks about Cole, the ghost from Inquisition. I
thought there was actually like one of the novels that actually was the fall of Adamant, or not, yeah, no, not Adamant. Adamant's the Warden Fortress. It was the stuff that led up to Cole leaving Rhys, Cole saving Rhys, and then Cole leaving because he was afraid that he was going to turn into a demon. It's like that story, and I can't remember what.
I hope it is, because that'd be very cool to read.
I mean, they have quite a few comic book series.
In the comic books, talk about like Alistair, the good king that is kind of the canonical for the Dragon Age storyline. He becomes king in the first game at the end of it. And then from there on, he's a big character in them. You meet him a couple times, but he's around the world doing big hero things.
Dragon Age Asunder.
Torn Asunder?
Just Asunder.
Asunder. That is the third book.
Yeah, it's the third book.
Okay. There you go. The one I haven't touched yet.
Okay. I was like, that's Cole's story.
That's amazing. I'm very excited for that. My goodness.
Hey, well, now you have something to look forward to.
Sorry.
Continue. So there's the six main novels, and then they also did some like supplementary like books. So they have like the world of, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Thedas.
Yeah, Thedas. Yeah, you nailed it. Thedas. Good job.
Funny story. Thedas is actually an acronym for the Dragon Age System.
Oh. Okay.
There you go. I always forget that detail, but I learned that a long time ago. I'm like, all right, guys, come on. Well done, but come on.
It worked out so well.
So good, yeah, yeah.
I just imagined some developer was just like, all right, we don't have a working title for this. We're just going to call it the Dragon Age System. And somebody was like, why don't we just call it Thedas? And everyone was like,
And that guy got a raise.
Wonderful. Okay, so which I have two volumes of The World of Thedas.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like an art of Dragon Age Inquisition.
And it's beautiful.
It is a very nice book.
And then an anthology book called The Dragon Age Tevinter Knights?
Yeah, Tevinter Knights. Okay. Yeah. Tevinter Imperium did some sketchy shit. They liked magic. It worked poorly for them.
They liked
at the end, it went downhill, yeah.
They liked magic a little too much.
Got it.
They're like power for a price. Mm-hmm. They're the cautionary tale of...
Got it.
We saw a very similar thing in the D&D
power
movie.
Power corrupts absolutely.
Who are those? The red mages,
the
right?
Red Wizards of Fae?
Yeah.
The Red Wizards
Very similar concept to the Tevinter mages. Okay. Very similar concept. What if unlimited power could become a lich and like suck the souls of everyone in the world? Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it.
Yeah. And the graphic novels are absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
The graphic novels are so much fun to read. I have several of the collections. Nice. It's also one of the few titles that I actually have on my pull list all the time. I'm like, Travis, Dragon Age stuff comes out, you put it in my box.
Did just reopen a pull list to get the Dragon Age one shots that are coming out.
I need to read the new new ones for the Inquisition
and
stuff.
And that's all about Scout Harding and Varric hunting down Solas.
I've been seeing panels of it around, and I'm like, I have to read this.
And then they also released a tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah, they did. I still have to buy it and play it, because I want to. But I want my dwarves to have magic, so we'll mix it up.
Well, that's the thing about any good role-playing system, is you can just self-insert magic into dwarves. You can just make that happen.
You can just do that.
You get to make up your own rolls in your own house.
Yep. Dwarves don't have magic in Thedas. Listen here.
The Vale, it's a mess right now. They're going crazy.
They found a way
everywhere.
To augment their blood with lyrium. Leave it alone.
I'm not saying they're shooting up lyrium. I'm not saying they're not doing
that.
I'm not saying they're not doing that. I'm saying it's more of a powder.
Right. It's you know, more cohesive. You know? Easier to carry around.
They've got their little snifters.
And every good fantasy character has a vice that makes them a compelling, relatable character.
Okay. Yeah.
And dwarves might be huffing lyrium.
Maybe, you know, who knows?
But that's the Templars thing.
Not what they're doing.
There is a whole role of knights in Dragon Age that they do two things. Oppress mages and do drugs.
Okay.
The drug is lyrium.
Lyrium gives them the ability to suppress magic in mages, so that's how they control the mages, is they take lyrium to augment their abilities to be the worst people.
Which, if you think about it, for 10 seconds, they're just doing magic to mess up magic.
To stop magic.
They are just becoming magical. We're not mages. We do sword magic. We do shield. It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
You're doing the same drugs, man. It's the same end result.
Listen. I also did sword magic as my as my elven warden. It was called Battle Mage. And you know what? Shut up about it. Arcane warrior, man.
That was a real good prestige class.
That was such a good class. Oh, man. It's my favorite. I have a mod to unlock it early so I can just unlock it at the very start of the game. Because I'm like, no. I want to be a battle mage. I want to wear heavy armor. And I want to use a sword. You get the Spellweaver sword. Great sword.
In Inquisition, might have been in earlier games as well, but in Inquisition, I know that you get like the hilt of the swords. But if you're the arcane warrior, you can turn it into like a magic. It's a lightsaber in Dragon Age.
It's a lightsaber
in my fantasy game, which makes it just straight up better.
I didn't like Battle Mage in Inquisition. I feel like they nerfed it really hard, and it was so much. Everything was better in Origins.
It really was. Like graphics, not great, but it still holds up. But they did nerf a lot of the classes.
They nerfed a lot of the classes. And, like, it made me so sad because Inquisition had the potential to just be... Like, Inquisition was an amazing game. Let me just start there. It was an amazing game.
End sentence.
But it had the potential to be so much more with the class building, and then they just nerfed it all. I think their goal was to make a really expansive, immersive world, but they didn't spend as much time on the character creation stuff as they should have.
Which, in any good fantasy world, the world building is very, very important. And the lore of Dragon Age has never once been like, eh. Like, I've always been really, really impressed with how
really
they set everything up, talk about all the characters that matter. But when it comes to, the individual characters that you're playing, your group of people, that definitely like, just the mechanical version of that. It's a little muted.
The story lore building also, I really appreciate. They build it through all three games. And it really does feel like the choices you make in the games you play have an impact on the world that you're playing in. Maybe not like I mean, you can't do everything.
Right, right.
But, like, the choices your warden makes influence things in the third game.
Yeah, no, there's very large differences in between. If you chose, you know, Morrigan, the evil sorceress, to have her way and the kid wasn't hers and the dark spawn was, like, won through eating the warden alive, the warden's gone. Like, there's no more superhero in the world. It's
the warden died.
Right.
Good job, the warden died.
Right, or the warden lives, and Alistair never becomes king, and you become in charge of the realm, and all of a sudden,
Alistair becomes a drunk.
Right. So, I love the fact that with these games, you can shape the story so much through all three. And the way that they do it is you have this like overarching website that connects all the games.
Yeah, it's called the Tapestry.
Right. If you don't have all the games on the one system that you're playing, and just playing through, and it remembers those, you can go on to the website, change everything, and then download that into the game and shape your story.
It's called a world state.
Right,
and so it just changes your entire story state for where you start, which I think is super cool. And I love that the comics specifically are doing a really good job at towing the line between new lore and not stepping on players' toes too much.
Because you have this established, like, Alistair is king. These X characters survived everything.
There's a default world state. There has to be, if you're telling a story, there has to be a default world state that doesn't necessarily match up with everybody's world state. But they're also not, like, going back and completely rewriting the history of Thedas.
Yeah, there's no invalidating the player's actions through the first three games.
Yeah.
And, like I said, again, I'll say it again, I'll keep saying it, Dragon Age world building. Exemplary.
Top tier.
And talking about the comics that are post all of the games, and probably a pretty good prequel to the fourth game that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Real soon, huh?
Real soon, 5 years later.
But they definitely set everything up really well, and coming back to all these characters and talking about it, you love these characters. They all have these intricate abilities and powers, and it all makes sense. It's all cohesive. There's very few plot holes. They really tie everything together nicely, and introducing these new concepts, like Hannah was talking about, when you have new villains, old villains, things that were parts of the game, new references, callbacks to something that happened 30 years ago, you know? And you still care about these characters. They're still doing everything that you expect them to do, even when you are playing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the writers of these books are like, yeah, no, Varric acts like this. I get what was your headcanon, and we're going to take some of that, and we're going to take what's actually happening, we're going to mix it together, and we're going to make a story that everyone really appreciates.
But when you read it, as a person who's played the games, you read it, and you're like, no, that is Varric, though.
No, that's what I did, that's what he did, that's what we're all doing.
That makes sense. That's just Varric. That's just fine.
Not to be confused from Varric from Varric Industries and Avatar. Different characters. We're talking about
we're talking about
a small dwarf author, not
Varric,
like a tall...
Varric Tethrys.
Right, very
the
different.
Best dwarf of all of the dwarves that have ever dwarfed.
He also writes cozy romance novels.
Are they? I don't think they're cozy.
What's the Sarah J. Maas books, right? I think that's definitely Varric Tethrys' writing style.
Okay. Varric specifically says that he writes tragedies.
Okay.
His romance novel, Sword and Shield, never actually sold enough copies for him to want to finish it. Cassandra is his only fan.
Another very good character. Strong warrior woman that's like, Brooks, no nonsense.
We were
and
cheated.
Reads romance books.
We were cheated because Cassandra is absolutely, at the very least, bi. And they're cowards. And they were like, no, she only likes men. And I'm like, you can't tell me. You cannot tell me. This is Pride Month. I'm allowed to talk about this.
No, I get where you're coming from. Because I played a female character in Inquisition. And I was like, great. Cassandra seems dope. I don't want pretty boy Alistair too. I mean, he's great. Love him.
Colin is my husband. And I'll fight anybody about it.
But he's not Cassandra, and that's what
Cassandra.
I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
right. And you can't even romance Illyana again, because she's in love with the Warden from the first game.
Mm. Even if you didn't romance the Warden in the first game, you can't romance Illyana because she's got all up in her feels.
Yeah, the spy master of Thedas is busy.
But you can romance the Iron Bull.
Now that's a scene.
And that is so awkward. I was trying really hard to just be like, and he's the best. But you know, that makes me so uncomfortable.
Oh, no.
there's this moment where if you're in the romance scene with Iron Bull, where you guys, you know, finish and the door opens and every single character in the goddamn castle makes their way to your room. Like, oh, what happened up here? And he's just laying there. And pride and joy out for the world to see.
It's all censored up. Because it's family friendly.
Right, exactly. But it's just each character that plays in the game,
It's all of your advisors and like maybe a couple other people.
All walking into the room like, oh, wow, Iron just Bull, like, oh my goodness. And it's like, ma'am, sir, we are busy.
Have any of you heard about knocking?
Like, I see the sock on the door. It's right there. What a good game.
I'm sorry. You bring up Dragon Age, and I'm just going to talk about the games for 5 hours because it is Dragon Age was, so God of War was my very first game series that I ever picked up to play was God of War for myself that I picked up for myself. And then I bought a PS3 and I bought a PS3 specifically to play the new God of War game that came out. And I just spent $600 on a gaming console. I should probably try another game. And so I was like, well, I don't really play very many games, and I like story-driven games more than I like, you know, like fighting and battle and all of that kind of stuff. So let me see what's out there. And I found Dragon Age, and I was like, sure, why not? And it has all been downhill from there.
Got it.
I don't even remember my introduction to Dragon Age other than like I saw it on Best Buy.
Yeah. And I was
like,
I think that I was like in Best Buy looking for a new game to try, and there was like, it's when Best Buy used to have those monitors that would play like game snippets and stuff. Right. And I went, oh, Dragons, that looks fun. And I was like, what's that game? And he's like, it's Dragon Age. And I was like, whoa. And now I have invested probably years of my life into it at this point.
Yeah, if we did the math, it's not an embarrassing amount because you can't be embarrassed about Dragon Age.
Right.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. I could have done so much better in school.
Sure,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I could have had my college degree so much sooner.
Sure, yeah.
What a good series.
Okay. So fantasy, though.
So fantasy.
Like, I don't know, man. I'm just going to be enamored with Dragon Age for the rest of the day.
We're escaping reality into fantasy, right? That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And we really enjoy doing this.
Well, and... Mm-hmm. The thing is, and Dragon Age is a really good, we've talked about it before, Dragon Age is a good example of media influencing books.
Right.
Because it started as a game.
Right.
Started as a gaming system. Just one singular game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they had ideas for others, but I don't know. What's Bethesda? I don't know. Or BioWare. Is it BioWare or Bethesda?
BioWare.
It's BioWare.
Because the Mass Effect trilogy. Because Mass Effect 1 came out, and then everyone was like, we love Mass Effect. And then they're like, we have Mass Effect, but fantasy. And everyone's like, oh?
And see, I was like, Dragon Age first, and then Mass Effect.
I didn't play Mass Effect till like a decade after I completed all of
It took Dragon me a Age. Really long time to play Mass Effect because I have never been a fan of like first person shooter games. And I was like, I don't know, man, this isn't a kind of game that I like. And somebody was like, no, if you like Dragon Age, though, you'll like Mass Effect. And so I picked up Mass Effect 2 first.
Which starts, and you need context for the start of Mass Effect 2.
But Mass Effect 2, though, has an interactive backstory.
Right.
At the start of the game, you can do the interactive backstory. So you get filled
set your
in.
World state.
Yeah, you get filled in on all of the major plot points that happened in the first game. So you're not completely lost. Going back and playing the first game fills in a lot. A lot. I've put an embarrassing amount of time into Mass Effect as well.
Yeah.
Legendary Edition came out, and I wasn't a person for a while. Just Mass Effect.
Mass Effect. I got Legendary Edition for my birthday when it came out, and I was like, okay, so this is all I'm going to be doing every waking moment of my free time. Thanks.
I didn't write it down, but do either of you know when the first Dragon Age video game came out?
Early 2000s. 2014 was Inquisition.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's been so long.
It was definitely a few years before that. It was after 2004, I believe.
I think it was 2006? Are you Googling?
I am Googling.
Okay. I'll let you Google. So we're not.
I was just curious about the timeline of when the books came out versus the...
Yeah, when does the first book come out?
November 3rd, 2009 is okay. The release of Dragon Age Origins. And then we got Dragon Age 2, March 8th, 2011. And then November 18th, right after my birthday, it was fate, 2014, Dragon Age Inquisition came out.
Okay, because I have the release date of The Stolen Throne as March 3rd of 2009.
Okay.
Yeah, so they released it. And, hey, this is the game that you guys are about to enjoy. Right. This is a good setup. This is the prequel, everything. These are the characters you care about.
So it's almost like here's the game. Currently they were like...
That makes sense, though, because they had, like we said, they had Merrick and they had Loghain and all of that. And so it makes sense that they would be like, if you want to know more about those characters, here's a book about
it. Releasing it in March. Nice. And give them enough time to finish the novel, think about it, and then just itching for more. Here's the game.
Here's the game.
Yep.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I didn't actually know that the books were released before the games were released.
Yeah, I didn't know the release date of Stolen Throne. That's
but
awesome.
If you think about how long production and stuff is, they were probably working on both of them at the same time.
They definitely were working on both of them at the same time. They had to be. I wonder if they had started with, because games often change, like they start a game and they often change. I wonder if the games started as a Merrick Loghain Stolen Throne adventure kind of thing, and then they were like, no, this isn't going to be a long enough game, but they had all the lore and they were like, let's make it a book.
Right, that probably was
whole, storyline, like let's do what happens after this. What happens to these characters after we've talked about this story, and that's up to you guys, the audience.
I really love this trend that we're seeing. It's not a new trend by any form or fashion, but we're seeing it more and more and more in media, where gaming companies also release books and graphic novels that tie in with their stuff to continue the storylines and continue moving forward. We got a Netflix show for Dragon Age. I mean, come on.
That was so good. I enjoyed so good. The hell out of that one.
But it's instead of being like, no, these are just like other things that have happened, or maybe they're non-canonical to the game or whatever. It's all in universe.
Right.
Yeah. The show even ties into a lot of the comics.
It does.
There's characters from there. Yeah. I was reading the comics like, that was just the girl from the movie. What is happening?
It's a lot cool, like the Avatar Legends, the system that's out now, is everything in the role-playing game is canonical in the Avatar universe. And the role-playing game actually got, we talked about this on the game cabinet, the role-playing game actually got to make history lore for the, oh man, nope, I lost it.
The Roku era?
Roku
stuff?
Era. And a lot of the Kiyoshi stuff as well.
Yeah, there's an excerpt from there. They talk about a clan of the Water Tribe, the Southern Water Tribe, that has like bored into the glaciers. On the southern continent, and has survived the war this entire time. There is just an entire clan of water tribe members just living in the ice caves.
I love that.
Which I was reading, there's like, they don't talk about this. What is this from? And it's not from anything.
But now it's canonical lore.
Everything in those books is canonical. They were given full permission to just make some stuff up.
And the same with the like new TV series and stuff that's going to be coming out, and the comics that are coming out. Everything is canonical in universe lore. And I love that trend of things because it makes it so much more immersive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's we talked about Star Trek.
Yes.
And how like everything is, the show takes precedent. Everything else is like not necessarily canonical. We can just disavow it if we want to. Star Wars does a lot of that.
Those really big IPs, I think. You take Star Trek to Star Wars, and it's like the movies, this is what happened. This stuff is stuff we've written about, but the second we find a plot hole, it's not canon.
And I think that this kind of canonical universe requires a lot more team effort and a lot more care and a lot more craft than just being like, oh yeah, we just put out like 17 books, it's fine.
Because every single Dragon Age thing, like the world building books, the Chronicles of Thedain, like that's just talking about what the world is. But the comics and the novels that are legitimate extensions of the story, not retellings, not things that we've already played through.
Yeah.
They're full new ideas, new stories that tie in really well with everything else.
Or things that got teased in the games, and then you get to find out the full backstory.
You find like this little thread halfway through a game, and you're like, wow, I wish they touched on that. You never hear from it again, and then you finish the series, you start picking up the books, like,
It's that thing.
It also feels like it's when stuff like this becomes really popular, it starts to feel like it gives like other authors permission to do like this the same thing, you know? Like Tolkien, he did it, like he's like the most well known. He did like a huge lore or whatever, but like maybe he's not as well known for it, but like Stephen King did the same thing with a lot of his stories where they tie into each other and like, and maybe like, but you could still read stuff without having to read everything, you know, and so it's all like loosely tied together and all that. But like most recently I've been reading Emily St. John Mandel, who, I mean, she has like 3 novels now that all like tie into each other, but like
they're independent, but they tie into each other.
I didn't know that that's what was happening, you know? So like she sort of just like started expanding this world without, like, because it's like Station 11 and then the Glass Hotel and then Sea of Tranquility. They all share characters and stuff and like that with each other.
It's not a trilogy, but it's like
it's not a trilogy.
It shares a world.
Characters that like jump between the stories. And
it's
stuff
within
like that.
The same universe, basically.
So it's like, and I really enjoy that. I like when they do like,
I just like stuff like that
word.
One of the first experiences I had with that specifically, Tamora Pierce is a fantasy author. She does urban fantasy. She does like fantasy, high fantasy, medieval.
She's an amazing author.
So the first series I read is like the Linus Rampant stuff, where you talk about this young girl that pretends to be a boy, switches place with her brother so he can go off to be a mage and she can learn to be a knight, where knights are men, right? So you get to see her growing up, and that there's 4 books there, all amazing. Her story, I love it to death, and I will keep reading it till the day I die. But then I was picking up her other books and I was like, oh wow, let me read this one. And then you like start it off and you realize you're in the same kingdom as the Lioness Rampant, and you hear about this like majestic copper-haired warrior woman with purple eyes in this other book, and you're like, oh, I read about her. I know how she got here. I know everything about this person.
Exactly.
And it's really cool to like see this character, and like you see the king again, who in the books you read about him as a boy, but in this next series you read about him being like a good king and doing everything he can to protect the kingdom, and these other things that they talked about could happen have happened, and you get to touch upon these other characters. And like the Protector of the Small series, another one she did in the same world, but it's about young girl Kelladry of Mindolin, who was a female knight, and the only reason she was able to go in to train to be a knight as a girl was because of the Lioness Rampant. Alana set that precedent, and it's in the same world, and you see her like connect with her. She has this mysterious benefactor, and you figure out later that it's Alana like helping her out with everything.
Did you ever read the Becca Cooper novels that she did?
I haven't read those.
They take place before Alana.
Do they
in the kingdom like hundreds of years prior?
Really? Wow.
And it's really cool. Because it talks about a lot of the things that you kind of know, and like some of the history that you get teased at sometimes, but like it's actually there.
It's so cool. I didn't realize there was a prequel to that stuff, because I've read, because there's
like, it's not like a true prequel, because like the Emily St. John Mandel, it's in the same universe, so things are happening that like you might recognize, but it's not like a prequel. It's like Becca Cooper. Hooray.
The person you've heard about. Here you go.
Becca Cooper was the first Tamora Pierce series that I ever read.
It's awesome.
And I love those books.
Right, okay. Might have to check those out.
Awesome, yeah.
I love stuff like that. I read, so, talked about it before, I'm going to talk about it again, Simon R. Green.
Yes.
He does a series called The Night Side. He also does a series called The Secret Histories, and it's about a character named Eddie Drood. Eddie Drood and John Taylor from the Nightside series exist in the same universe and occasionally cross paths.
Cool.
So I love that, because they're both completely separate series. They both kind of tangentially take place in the Nightside, but they don't, like, you don't have to read one to read the other. They don't overlap. Shanna McGuire does a lot of that in her urban fantasy stories as well, with a lot of overcrossing and stuff.
Because it's like, it's one of those things where, like, I do love a good series, but like if I'm not expecting a series, sometimes like I get annoyed, because I'm like, I thought this was just gonna be one book, and now you're telling me it's the first in a 5 book series, and now I'm mad because now I have to finish it.
The thing that I like the most, I think, about Simon R. Green, about The Night Side, about The Secret Histories novels and stuff, is they are a series,
But each book wraps up its plot so nicely that you could just read one. You don't want to because you want to know what happens. There's always a few loose threads that connect throughout the whole thing, but each book has its own storyline that really just ends in a good button.
They don't leave you with this massive like cliffhanger. You want to read the other books because they're good.
Yeah,
not
you want to read.
They didn't tell you how the story.
You want to read the other books because you want to know about the exploits of John Taylor and just the shenanigans that he's going to get up into in the night side. But you don't have to. You could leave that and come back to it at some point. You wouldn't be missing anything. And I appreciate that.
I appreciate that a
really
lot.
Cool.
That's really
cool.
Because that's the same thing I had with when I read John Carter of Mars.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like 36 books or something like that. I don't even have any idea. I never read all of them. But like, you could conceivably just end after the first three, which, I mean, still is a trilogy, but, like, it has a nice ending where, like, the storyline that was going through the first three is, like, done and you could do, but you could then go on to the further adventures of John Carter or whatever.
Nothing makes me angrier than reading a book that ends in a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me more upset than that because I don't have a ton of time to read. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of other stuff going on in my life. And I want to sit down and just finish a book. And I want it to be done. And I want to know how the story ends. If there's more to the story, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But finish what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't want to read a second book.
That's a callback to Dragon Age again. But that's what I'm excited about, finishing The Stolen Throne, because I know the end of that story. There's no cliffhanger. The cliffhanger is the game I played 10 years ago.
The cliffhanger is the Darkspawn are back. Hope we all don't die.
Spoiler, they do.
Spoiler alert, if you haven't... If somehow you've missed this game in the last, what, it came out in 2009, you don't deserve spoiler warnings.
No. Like, yeah, we're talking about spoilers of shit that came out decades ago, decades man.
Ago. Listen, it's not too soon at this point. They all die.
Yeah, dark fantasy. You gotta love it.
Except Loghain, he can live, but you feel really bad about it.
See, you also keep saying Loghain, which is a character in The Wheel of Time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think you told me about that earlier. I read The Wheel of Time, too, but it's been a very long time.
And I just keep thinking, because Loghain is like, you kind of love to hate him in The Wheel of Time.
I mean, it's kind of the same in Dragon Age.
In Dragon Age, he's a very pragmatic fellow. Mm-hmm. He's like, this is how we solve this issue. I don't care how we solve it, but I know the best way to solve it, and I'm in charge, so...
And then
that's
his
exactly Loghain from The Wheel of Time.
And then his guilt kind of makes him a little insane.
Yeah, he spends a couple years stewing in his insanity, for sure, for sure.
Loghain is definitely going insane in The Wheel of Time.
Loghain from Dragon Age is just that one in the future.
Same, yeah.
I've never let Loghain live in Origins because I can't.
I have to be the one to duel him to the death, too. I can't just let Alistair kill him. Like, no, this is my job now.
No, absolutely. I kill him every time. But I have world-stated him a few times alive. Because Loghain in the Fade in Inquisition is so much fun.
I think I did that once, and I'm like, no, I don't like this canon. I'm going back and killing him again.
It made the choice between the Warden and Hawk super easy for me, though. Because I was like, hey, Loghain. Hey, buddy, why don't you stay and kill the demon? We're all going to go live. Bye.
But okay, very competent warrior.
But I really,
crazy man.
But I really liked what they did for him in the Fade with the fear demon taunting him. Because it gave you a really good, like, view of, like, how he's dealing with his guilt and shit. All of that in
poorly.
It.
Poorly.
Poorly, but like... But like a warrior.
Right.
Competently.
Right. Yeah.
But badly.
Yeah. Like, he's not very in touch with his emotions. Let's be honest.
He's not. I am the person that never leaves Hawk behind in the Fade. I did it one time to see what happened, and I quit my game and reloaded from before the fight. I was like,
Alt-F4'd a few times. Like, no, this isn't happening. This isn't canon. I'm going back.
I got out of the Fade, and like Varric runs up to you, and he's like, "Where's Hawk?" And I was like, "Oh no, I can't do this. Like, hold on, Varric. I'm gonna go get your friend back.
I didn't mean it.
I didn't mean it. I'm going to go save Hawk right now. Just don't worry, sweetheart. I'll be right back."
is rewinding time as we speak.
And everybody, like all the forums that I follow and stuff, they're like, I have such a hard time choosing between like Alistair and Hawk. And I'm like, I don't.
That was an easy choice.
Alistair's a whiny baby. I don't know what you guys are having so much trouble about.
But his boyish charm.
But his boyish charm. He doesn't have it. I have a lot of opinions on Dragon Age characters that would get me just murdered by the fandom. People are really rabid about their fandom, mm-hmm. like stuff. Yeah. They get so nasty so fast in the, like, we've talked about fandoms before.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
The Dragon Age fandom is unnecessarily hostile, and I don't understand why. Because they're games. I have some very strong opinions on the characters also, but if somebody's like, no, Alistair's my favorite character, I'm like, I disagree, but I'm really happy like, that yeah, somebody I'm glad likes
you
him.
Like him, I don't care. But
somebody's like, I love Solas, and I'm like, why? But okay, I guess he's just the worst.
The first time like interacting with Solas, like romancing him through the whole story, and at the very end it's like that scene from Frozen, right? Like, I mean, hopefully someone loves you because I don't, like, Oh my god.
I started my first playthrough of Inquisition and went, you're telling me that I can romance my Templar boy that I've been flirting with for two games now?
Right, well, Cullen, finally.
Cullen's my husband now. Sorry. Talking about my fictional husband.
Okay, I just noticed how, what time it was.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Let's do real quick. We know that you're reading The Stolen Throne. Are you reading anything else currently?
So I just finished a reread of one of my favorite series. I talk about, like, you pick up a book, realize that it's 8 books long, and you're like, all right, I'm going to finish it. I'm here already. The Rune Lord series.
Ooh. Lord.
I, of course, forget the author. I know we have it, but it's a high fantasy medieval. It's about this king that gets power from his subjects. They like inscribe runes that take the power from a person and put it on one person, right? So you can take like temperament, you can take strength, you can take speed.
Interesting.
The person that gives it loses that attribute, but the person that gains the rune gains that. So the person gaining runes could have 16 runes of strength and they'd be 16 times stronger. But then 16 people have no strength now.
Oh, that's fun.
So they all these people give their power to the Lord. So the Lords, the Rune Lords, have power and can save the world
strange.
And protect the kingdom.
It's like that's the title of the books.
And this series goes from high fantasy, magic is real. No one's casting fireballs. The magic's all this rune magic. Mm-hmm. But then from there, these characters grow old and die. And you have these other characters that are, there's one character that lives the entire series, the Laughing Berserker. And he's my favorite. He's just an amazing
like
guy.
Fun.
Right?
I'm down for him right now. Just like the name alone. I'm like, you're my buddy now.
But this series goes from, I'm fighting to defend my castle, to there's demons in the underworld, to we're in space traveling across time.
Oh, okay.
And the last book is the Laughing Berserker fighting gods in space, effectively. It ramps up. There's 8 books and it's logical. It makes sense.
That escalated so quickly.
But it escalates drastically.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I love that series so much because the lengths they go to at the end, you start so small and like any good D&D campaign, it immediately goes off the rails. And at level 20, you are conquering planets. And it's so much fun.
That sounds legit though. That sounds right. Sounds really cool. I love that. That's
awesome.
The
Rune Lord series. You should look into it. Yeah, it's very good.
Cool. If you're watching us on YouTube, I will put up a picture of the book and the author here on the screen. If you're listening to us on a standard podcast app,
We all have supercomputers in our pockets. We can look it up.
I'm just kidding. I love all of you who listen to us on a regular podcast app. I just don't have a way to share that with you.
I'm just going to guess the last name is probably Martin. One of the Martins.
Yeah.
It's a Martin. I don't know.
It sounds
It starts with
There's so many Martin.
It starts with a letter of the alphabet.
It definitely has a letter in it.
Sarah, what are you reading right now?
Okay, so
you got it,
David Farland. It's a David Farland series.
Farland.
Very
there you
good.
Go. Okay,
9 books now. My goodness.
Okay, Sarah, how about you? What are you reading?
Okay, so I just finished reading a novella called "The Scourge Between the Stars"
Ooh.
By Ness Brown, which was so good. It's a sci-fi horror novel. about like a bunch of humans from Earth went to Proxima B to set up a colony. Then the colony failed, so they abandoned the colony and are headed back to Earth. And now they're about like about 1,000 years away from getting back to Earth because of their propulsion systems are not like everything's going wrong on the ship, basically. And then there's something else on the ship with them.
That's my favorite stuff.
Proxima B left a souvenir.
That's my favorite stuff. Stowaway aliens. That's my favorite stuff.
It was very, very good. Yeah, it was very good. Oh, that's the name of that book? It's called The Scourge Between the Stars. Oof. It's very good because it's like a bunch of weird stuff. Like they're bombarded by something on the outside of the ship too that they can't pick up on like sensors, which has fucked up their propulsion system. But then, and so they're also dealing with those attacks, they keep calling them, because they can't figure out like what it is. But then the people on the ship keep going missing too, and then that's when they figure out that there's something else on there with them. So yeah,
good horror stuff. Concept good I like it. I like that. Space is a scary place.
Something in the shadow.
Ooh, I love it.
So I just finished reading that one, so good. And then I've been reading it's called Cursed Bunny.
Okay.
Is that also a horror one?
Is it the sequel to Benicula?
I was just thinking Benicula, yeah. Yeah, is this like a vet visit gone wrong?
It's an anthology. The author's name is Bora Chung, so it's translated from Korean.
Ooh, okay.
So it's a bunch of short stories. The book titled Cursed Bunny, like short story in the book is about like a guy who gets revenge on the owner of this like liquor company because he was making liquor that was really good, but then they like did something to sabotage his business, so then they got rich and he went destitute. So then he like carved a little bunny and then like gave it to the head guy of the other thing, and then
it cursed them.
Yeah. And then it did a lot of horrible things to a lot of their family. So
monkey's paw without the wish.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow.
So it was okay. Pretty creepy. But
I mean, Korean horror is
it's good.
Yeah.
It's a very good genre.
It's such a good
genre. Some of those movies, like they're over the top. They're very dramatic, but it's good. Mm-hmm. Very good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. So good.
Parasite, right? That was a movie that came out. That was really good. That wasn't even fantasy. That was just real.
It was just
this
like,
could happen.
People,
this
could happen.
Horrible.
It was happening, man. People living in your house.
I don't know if anybody is surprised to hear, but I'm not reading anything right now.
Okay.
So, like, I'm just gonna skip over me. I'm working on a bunch of projects for some stuff, and I don't have time to be reading anything right now.
I would love to read. I have my second book in the Murderbot Diaries just sitting on my shelf, like looking at me every day, and I'm like, I need to read you.
When I finish Stolen Throne, I'll bring it into work, put a big sticky note, Hannah, and put it on a put it up, see if you find it.
Just put it in my box and I'll be like
make you read something.
I'll just call out sick from work and you'll like leave it in my box and the next day I'll just be sick.
Well, I'm Hannah. It's fine. She'll get over it. It's fine.
Get over it.
It's 24 hour sickness stuff.
I've got the blight.
Big deal.
She's trying to be a Grey Warden, actually. She drank the Darkspawn blood. She's going through it. Just give her a bit.
I've got to throw up a few times.
Well, either you throw up or Duncan stabs you. So, I mean,
yeah. Oh, man. Did you play the DLC with the Darkspawn?
Yeah. Where you are the Darkspawn?
No, the Warden's Keep.
Oh, yeah. The Warden's Keep DLC.
Where Ogryn becomes the Grey Warden, and he just, like, drinks the blood and then just, like, burps and he's fine.
Another very good dwarf character. Talk about a laughing berserker. He's delightful.
People hate Ogryn so much, and he is like my because he's gross.
Yeah, he's a dwarf berserker. He's not clean.
He's supposed to be gross.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I love Ogryn's like my drinking buddy. Okay. Like I would go drinking with Ogryn.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would bring a dagger to stab Ogryn's hand, but I would go drinking with Ogryn.
Just point him at the rest of the bar. Go crazy, kid.
I was also reading this book. I usually read an anthology and like a regular book at the same time. It's been my it's the thing.
Your modus operandi.
Yeah. And so I'm also reading a book called Two Tiny Claws by Brett Davis, which is like
it's about cats.
No,
it's the dinosaur one.
Oh my god, next best thing.
And I'm like, there's this thing that keeps happening because I'm like three or four chapters in and there's aliens already also. And like, and I still haven't seen a living a dinosaur yet, but there's aliens. And I don't know if I should be offended by this or not, but like they never describe the aliens except to say that they look like Swedish people.
What does that mean?
Are they trying to go for like indescribable horror
right?
the stars?
I don't
like,
know.
Are they Lovecraft? Just saying that they're like tall, and slender, blonde,
right.
blue eyed?
I can't figure
like,
it out.
What's, huh? That's
what
weird.
Is that?
I don't think I've ever heard that description as an alien.
What is that?
This alien looks kind of like an American. What does that mean? I don't know. Whatever you want it to mean.
This alien looks like an Irish person. What does that mean?
What are you saying?
Exactly. They I don't know. Because even like when they were from an alien's perspective, because they were talking about how they have to put on their skin suits so that they look
Same.
Like humans.
Me too. Me too.
I mean, also relatable.
And then they were like, yeah, we kind of look like Swedish people. I don't know. I don't know what that means.
It's a broad thing.
I feel like the author has seen like one Swedish
right?
person and is like, that's what Swedish people look
that's
like.
That's all of them right there.
And I mean, to
listen,
be fair,
Sweden,
I'm also only four chapters in, so it's not like they
listen,
said it a ton, but it stuck out to me.
Okay? I like to think that every other page, they're like, yes, and the aliens that look like Swedish people.
Yeah.
Sweden is not the most diverse place on the planet, but it is diverse. Sorry.
It sounds like a brilliant book.
Yeah.
I love it.
What was the name of this one again?
Two Tiny Claws.
Two Tiny Claws.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got the front cover of it is a cowboy and he's riding on a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
That's good. That's a good intro.
That's why
book,
I picked
I
it up.
Yeah.
Like, it
don't judge
like...
it by its cover. Unless it's got a cowboy riding a T-Rex, then do judge it.
Yeah. Yep. No, I was going to say, in modern publishing, you can kind of judge a book by its cover, but not always, because independent publishing still doesn't have good book covers.
Yeah.
No,
not
that's,
very often.
That's valid.
No.
Good stuff on the inside. Kind of, nah.
Yeah,
cover.
Yeah.
I mean, book covers are expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
doing
and
the art for it, paying for someone,
and if you're trying to self-publish or like anything like that, it's hard to get good cover art that looks really nice. And I totally understand that. I judge no one for having like a meh kind of cover on their book.
Yeah, if it's a good book, it's a good book.
If it's a good book, it's
like.
A good book. Read all of the books.
Yes.
Except the ones I don't like. Which I won't say on the podcast. Because
all books
if,
are good books. That's not true.
Because if you like them, I'm happy for you. What are our book club books?
Okay, book club books. Underground Book Club is reading Loki's Ring by Stina Leecht.
Is that the current one? Or is that... Because you guys are going to talk about
that's the
that
one. That's just coming out, right? Like,
that's right.
You guys
oh,
are just starting
gonna,
to read.
This is going
to
go after
yep,
that.
This is going to go after that. Talking about Loki's Ring.
Oh, so then... So that's June's book. July's book will be Moon Called by Patty Brown.
Oh, hey. Awesome. Easy. Yeah. Easy.
That's cool.
Do you,
I've read that one.
Do you happen to know what the YA book club
so,
book for July is going to be?
I know they're currently reading
Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're listening to this on YouTube, once again, I will put a picture right there on the screen of the YA book club book for July.
Wow, I love that book.
I know, right? It's a great book.
It's a great book.
By that person who does really good stuff.
Oh, look at that cover. Wow, that's so good.
Yeah, good stuff. All around.
If you want to, if you're listening to us on our standard podcast app and you want to find out what the book club book is, you can go to advunderground.com. You can look at our book club pages for that, or you can follow us on Facebook and join the AU book club on Facebook to find out before the podcast comes out, which gives you the option to buy the book at a discount in the store. Because by the time this podcast comes out, the discount is no longer valid. Which I'm sorry about, but I can't change the timing, so...
Yeah.
Just how the cookie crumbles.
We thought I'd just print off one of the things and leave it up here, so I always forget to look it up.
Yeah.
I just need the list.
I always forget to remind you, too, though, because I'm always like, oh, yeah, Sarah will know.
I'm like, I know what the current book is.
Everyone call Carrie. See who picks up first.
Right. Yeah, really. The funny thing is like almost every time we record, you don't remember. Mm-hmm. But almost every time we record, I go, Sarah will know.
Yes. Just a vicious circle.
It's just a vicious circle.
Of assumed confidence.
Yeah. Right.
I don't prep for these things, man.
I showed up here today. I woke up about an hour ago, and we've been here for about an hour. So thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It's great to be here.
Torin, thanks for coming on the show. It was super fun.
It was really fun.
We normally talk a lot more about books and a lot less about video games, but like...
she mentioned Dragon Age.
Right.
No, you can't hold this against me.
I feel like that was kind of Sarah's fault. Because I came up here ready to talk about books, and then she was like, I thought we would talk about Dragon Age today. And I was like, oh boy, I hope you realize that I'm not talking about any of the books. I'll talk about all the books in the game, like Harden Hightown. I own a copy of that.
Really? Like an actual copy
of
that?
Yeah, they made a little...
Yeah, they published it.
I'll have to let you borrow it sometime.
Please, that's hilarious.
It's just a little short book, but it's Harden Hightown by Varric Tethrys. It's amazing.
A whole new world.
It's like that... Oh, sorry, I'm going to go on.
No, do it.
Because it's like...
Do it.
Books and video games that like are being published as books, because didn't that happen with I'm gonna totally put my foot in my mouth, but I think it happened with, what's that, Critical Role and Orca Roika. Have you ever heard of Orca Roika? Called.
I'm not as much of a Critical Role aficionado as I could be, but I do believe
it did, though.
Yeah,
because that sounds familiar. Yeah,
in the second campaign, Laura Bailey's character loves these novels that are like an erotica called Orca Rorka or something like that. I don't know how to pronounce the second word because it's not
English.
It's not English.
Or any terrestrial language.
I feel like you are correct that they published that. Because I feel like I picked it up off the new arrival shelf at one point and went, what the hell is this?
Exactly.
And then it was like Critical Role. And I was like, oh, that makes... I didn't even read what it was about. I was just like, oh, no, that makes sense.
That tracks.
So, you know.
Games, books, graphic novels, they all tie together in some kind of neat little bow.
They do.
Fantasy is a genre that spans all sorts of fandoms. So, and you really can't talk about fantasy without talking about not books, too. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because in our current culture, it's so just ingrained in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Movies, television, games, board games.
Board games.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Everything has fantasy in it. Fantasy is the basis of human storytelling.
It's nice to escape into fantasy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I enjoy reading about something that literally could never happen.
Fantasy?
It's so much fun.
In this economy?
It's like the oldest form of literature that...
I agree. Okay. But I think that's
about everything.
What a delightful time. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks
it was
so
fantastic
much for
talking
thank
about mainly Dragon Age, but other things too.
We'll have to have you back on sometime.
Sure, yeah,
talking about
please.
Other things that aren't Dragon Age.
That might be difficult. I don't know.
Or we could just have another Dragon Age podcast.
If we sit down with a Dragon Age podcast, I will come prepared.
Okay. All right. Thanks everyone for listening.
You've been listening to The Word Warren on AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventure Underground at their online store or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/advunderground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows and soon many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.